Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Courtside with Beilinson Tennis, part of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. Here with my co-host and Hall of Famer, Steve Flink, just wrapped up Monte Carlo. We're going to obviously talk about that. Just some housekeeping. We're recording this on Sunday night around 8 p.m. Eastern. So Monte Carlo is done, and then we're getting ready, for Barcelona, which, the meat of that tournament starts tomorrow on Monday. And before we kind of get to will Rafa play or won't he play, let's start talking to Monte Carlo. One other housekeeping item before we get into Monte Carlo is something that I think a lot of tennis viewers kind of saw the writing on the wall type of thing. It just never seemed to fit right from the get-go. Francis Tiafoe and Diego Moyano splitting up at the beginning of this week. We still don't know what happened with Tiafoe and Wayne Ferreira. There was never really a statement on that, Steve. But the Tiafoe Moyano, Francis is obviously a good player. Diego Moyano, obviously a really good coach. I saw them firsthand in Del Rey. It wasn't lack of work ethic or anything. I mean, Francis was practicing every day when he wasn't playing, sometimes two-a-days. Diego Moyano has a great reputation. It's just sometimes the personalities or whatnot don't mesh. I mean, you're not surprised by this split, Steve.
No, I'm not. But I don't think we're looking at a Holger Rune situation like when he went to Boris Becker and then went back to Mouratoglou. I'd be really surprised if Francis, if it happened, great, because I think Ferreira did a tremendous job with him. But I'm not expecting that to happen. So that's my only concern is, okay, he's scurrying around in the middle of the season, mid-April. He's got to find somebody. I don't think he's going to want to go coachless for a long time. So I hope for his sake he can land somebody soon, and it's too bad the other one didn't work out. And I also can't believe it's strictly the results that Francis had, that you would blame it on the coach as opposed to the fact that maybe you didn't play up to the standards you wanted. So it'll sort itself out soon enough.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you see something like Maria Sakkari, David Witt connection, and everyone kind of gets pumped up about that connection. And sure enough, so far the results have shown that relationship is working well. This one with Moyano and Tiafoe just was like, it was interesting at the get-go, and then the results weren't there. It's almost like better, you know, let's just break it off sooner rather than just kind of string it along if both know that it's just not working.
Yeah, but the mystery to me all along was, why did he ever let Wayne go? I mean, I'm sure they both had their reasons. There's a lot that we don't know. But what we do know is that it was a pretty successful partnership. We do know that Wayne himself was a great player, really good tennis mind. And they seemed to get along well. And I thought the strength of that relationship, and I base this on interviews I did with Wayne, is that he spoke his mind, you know, that he would tell Francis exactly what he thought. And sometimes that meant some strong constructive criticism. But I thought they gelled well together, and they'd had some really good couple of years. So that's the mystery to me, is why that one broke up. Not this one, but that one.
Yeah, let me repeat. I think I heard you correctly. You said that you wonder why Francis let Wayne go. We don't know if that's the case, right?
Yeah, all right. No, we don't. I mean, look, I either way, I don't. If it was Wayne deciding to go, that's also a mystery to me. Why, if they seem to have a very good way of operating together and an honest way of, you know, in their dialogue. So even if it was him, I don't get that either. So yeah. Someday we'll know the story. But in the meantime, Francis is at a critical stage of his career. These next couple of years are pretty important to him. So therefore, he needs to get this resolved fast so that he can get into the heart of this season, try to do decently in the European clay, have a good Wimbledon, and then particularly have the hard court circuit that we know he's capable of having.
Agreed. All right, let's get into the tennis in Monte Carlo. No Rafa. No Carlos. They both withdrew before the tournament. Novak Djokovic. I think if you're a Novak fan, I think you're pretty satisfied with this week. Yeah, he lost in the semis, but he has some good wins, and he had some challenging matches early, Steve. I mean, Musetti is no gimme. That's not a gimme early round matchup. Novak was down early one. He beats also Alex de Minaur. Casper Ruud beats Novak 6-4 in the third in the semis. How did you see the week play out for Novak?
Well, I saw all the matches, and I think it's a mixed bag, as he said himself in the press conference at the end. He definitely took some positives. He started off with a really first-rate performance against Safiulin, the Russian, and beat him 1 and 2. And the three games that Safiulin won were all – he was down break points in all three of those games. So Djokovic was really sharp in that match. It was a very, looked like a relatively cool day. Nice start. Then he started having the ups and downs, you know. In the Musetti match, he was down 3-1 and almost got down two breaks. And then he was also down 4-3, 40-love. Musetti with those three game points to get to 5-3. Didn't get there. And Novak pretty much took over from there, 7-5, 6-3. Little lapse in the second set. Then he plays a very strange match against Alex de Minaur. And de Minaur, of course, had beaten him in Australia at the start of the year in the team competition. So this is the second match in a row that Novak is avenging a loss against a player who beat him the last time. And the first set I thought was pretty clean. It was came down to one break at the end of the set, and Novak won it 7-5. Pretty good set from both. And the second set was very strange. Six straight breaks at one stage, David, until de Minaur finally holds to make it 4-4. Then from there, Djokovic, the last two games, got into the lockdown mode and didn't miss much, only lost one point. He looked good the last two games. But it was, you know, de Minaur went up to him to shake hands and said, this was ugly. And he didn't mean you played ugly. Just neither way. He felt that neither one of them played well. Novak felt that was probably true of the second set more than the first. And then we come into the Casper Ruud match. He hasn't lost to Ruud in five previous matches, which included the ATP Finals a couple of years ago and the French Open Final last year. Now, they've had some tight sets. But right again, for the third match in a row, David, The weird part of these Novak matches, but in the first sets of these matches, is when he was looking physically shit. You would have thought it was the middle of the fourth or fifth set in a Grand Slam. He looked uneasy and breathing heavy and like he'd already had been out there playing 130-stroke rally after another for at least three sets, and we were in the middle of the first set. That was a little bit odd, but he professionally, he worked his way through it. He just plodded on and got better. He got better, but he got off that slow start in the Ruud match was more costly than it was in the previous two matches because he got down two breaks in a hurry, 4-1, got one of them break, but one of the breaks back, but lost the set 6-4. Then he was on a roll in the second set, and despite missing 16 out of 21 first serves. Imagine that. He made five first serves and missed 16. Never came close to getting broken because Ruud was standing so far back for the second serve returns. Novak played an almost perfect set from the baseline, and he wins it 6-1, helped by three Ruud double faults at 1-4 when he was already down a break. So you figured coming into the third, Ruud was sagging a bit. Novak was finding his range. But sure enough, and before you knew it, Ruud was up 4-1 in the third, one break. Novak gets it back to 4-all, and again, you figure here he is. This is his moment. But Ruud played a terrific game at 4-all. And then the last game, Novak serving to stay in it, three shaky points in a row to go love 40. He saves two match points with an ace and a serve and volley. And then on the third, I counted, David, 19 bounces of the ball before hitting the second serve. 19 bounces. He gets like that sometimes when he's a bit tight, I think.
Earlier in his career, he was doing that a lot more than he does now. I do that.
Yeah, true. But the weird part of it was he had just saved two match points brilliantly. Ruud is not threatening him on second serve returns particularly. And a few here and there, heavy topspin returns that provoked errors, but largely not a threat, staying way back to make the return. So Novak's pretty safe to hit any kind of second serve he wants. And he didn't really go for it that big, but he went down to the tee and he missed it by about 3 feet. It was way out. And I honestly think he robbed himself of rhythm. He took too long. And then he kind of went up and they looked at each other. And Ruud said afterwards how relieved he was because Novak was doing his Novak routine and playing so great under pressure to save the first two match points. And he's thinking, I hope something can happen. And he was very funny about that. But so all I'm saying is, yeah, mixed bag because his level was never where he wanted it to be. I'd say with the exception of the Safiulin match in the first round, where he wasn't challenged too much, and the second set of Ruud in the semis.
But he got his matches in. He didn't lose early. Right. He got matches in, which is good.
Yeah, and he'd only had 11 matches up until this all year long, 8-3 coming in. So this was very valuable to get four more. That's the positive. The negative was he goes out on the court knowing that Tsitsipas has beaten Sinner. So when you're struggling with your form, and I could see how if Sinner had won, he'd be thinking a little bit about what might be at stake in the final and wondering if he was playing well enough to beat Sinner right now. But with Tsitsipas, who you've beaten 10 times in a row, I thought that might work in his favor. Not that he was going to assume that he had what was going to win the title if he gets to the final, but that he'd be obviously more confident about beating Tsitsipas and also, therefore, getting his year on track. He improved it for sure. The semi was, after what happened in Indian Wells, this was a big step in the right direction. But I felt like if he could have gotten through that match, if he made the comeback in the third and finished it off and won 6-4 in the third instead of losing 6-4 in the third, he would have been sharp in the final. I think we would have seen his best. On the other hand, he can look forward to both Madrid and Rome and know that he's, you know, he did get those matches. So I suspect we're going to see better and better from him in those two tournaments. My guess is he gets close to peak form in Rome and that by the French, just like last year, we'll see his best.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that evaluation of Novak. You mentioned Tsitsipas talking about getting your year off to a better start now. You know, Brad Gilbert on Twitter earlier had a great line. He said one week his college coach told Brad back in the day this line, and it's so true. One week can absolutely turn your confidence and year around. Every Monday, his coach said, is a start of a new 52-week calendar. And for Steph Tsitsipas, I mean, he's struggled. He has not had the results that he's wanted for a while. What a week he had. He beats Zverev and Kachanov in straight sets, beats Sinner in three, and then beats Ruud in straight sets. He's now back up to 7 in the world. He's won this title 3 times, Steve.
Yeah, no, look, this has been a fantastic tournament for him, no doubt about it. Brad is right. It changes his whole psyche right now. You could see how it's about it, the happiest, most gratified, fulfilled I've seen him look in a long time. Couple of comments on what you just mentioned. Number one, the Zverev match. He played really well. He had like a one in love over Echeverry. So that was the first sign to me that he was playing great. Then he gets out against Zverev and wins the first set. Tight first set, he wins it. And he goes up 5-love in the second set and it went to a tiebreak. He's managed to pull himself together in the tiebreak. That could have been devastating to lose the set and perhaps the match from a set and 5-love, but he didn't allow it to happen. He beat Khachanov quite comfortably. Now, the Sinner match was amazing because played a terrific first set, did Tsitsipas. One break early for 2-1 and made it count, won the set 6-4. Goes down 3-love in the second, makes a bid to come back, had 5 break points in the last game of the set before Sinner served it out at 5-3 and won the set 6-3. But that if Steph would have broken there, who knows, might have won it straight. Then he goes down a break in the third. And then when he's serving David at 1-3 in the third, he saved a break point, and then he's down break point again. He hits what's clearly a double fault. The umpire does not overrule, and Sinner didn't. Obviously, it's so tough on the players. They're getting used to the electronic lines. Next year, they're going to have them everywhere. But he didn't react in time, so he ends up making the returns, a little confused. Steph comes into the net, and Sinner misses a forehand pass. So, and then eventually, Tsitsipas holds on. But Sinner later talked about that point leading to what were apparently cramps, because when he was up 3-2, he started to sort of hobble a bit after points. You saw him kind of stretching out his leg. And then he called, when he got to 4-2, he asked the umpire for the trainer. He got the trainer at 4-3. But eventually what happened was Tsitsipas ran out the last 4 games in a row from 4-2 down. And you could see that Tsitsipas was getting stronger and stronger and really going for his shots, and that Sinner was having great difficulty moving to his right. The running forehand, the stretch forehand was becoming a bigger and bigger problem. So it was a great win for Tsitsipas. He was asked about the double fault later, and listen, he has no reason to feel guilty about it. It happened. Sometimes you're the victim of something like that. He got a really good break at a crucial moment that saved him from going down 2 breaks in the final set and almost certainly losing, and took full advantage of it. But what I found intriguing was Sinner seemed to be saying that this onset of cramps was a result of nerves related to the call, because he knew had he won that point, this is at least how I interpreted his remarks. He knew, obviously, if he could get the break for 4-1, B2 breaks up, he's not going to lose. So it was a fascinating turnaround. In a way, I think it's almost like it was meant to be, because I think that, as you pointed out at the outset, he's had a tough time. He had an 11-6 match record leading up to this tournament. That's a terrible, by his standards, that's desultory. Just awful by Tsitsipas standards. And he hadn't had great results last year after he got to the final of the Australian at the beginning of 23. So for him, this is such a shot in the arm. I think Gilbert's right. I think this really could turn out. Now, I'm not saying he's suddenly going to go out and win two majors now, but I think it'll take, no matter what he does between now and Roland Garros, he'll do well because on the clay, he's always consistent. He will be a big threat now at Roland Garros. He needed something like
this. And he's already had previous success there. I mean, you remember just what, in 2021, he was in the final against Novak up 2-0. So yeah, he has comp prior results here that he can kind of lean on and take with him going.
Oh, forward. No. And just good results there generally. Absolutely. He was in a semi against Novak the year before that he lost in 5 sets. He was in the quarters last year. His results at Roland Garros are terrific. No, but what I mean is that he wouldn't have had that feeling. He wouldn't have been thinking about 21 so much if he just had a pretty lackluster clay court. So now, by winning the first big event, he just needs good, solid results from here to Roland Garros, and I'm sure he'll get them because he's so comfortable on clay. So I think it's going to be fascinating to watch it, because that year in 21, he knocked off Medvedev and Zverev and then had the 2-set lead against Novak on a hot day. And Novak turned it around brilliantly to win in 5. But I feel like it's his best surface, and we're going to see some pretty spectacular tennis from him in the weeks to come.
Know who's continued to struggle, and it's been interesting ever since he had the incident with the lines person when he was yelling at him pretty loud, was Andrei Rublev. He lost early again. He lost to Popperin in the second round. He has not had good results at all since that incident. I mean, he's too good a player for him not to turn it around, I think, rather, sooner rather than later. But it's just interesting. And I don't know if you link it to the issue that he had with the Lions person at the time, but it's just, I don't know if it's circumstantial or whatever, but he has not had good results since that incident.
I think it's coincidental. I mean, that's my view. You're right. No, bad stretch since then. But what I've seen with him over the last 3 years, especially, he can fall into these little slumps, but he keeps playing and he keeps playing. And then suddenly he's in a final, or he might win a tournament. He's too good to keep losing matches like that. I'm not worried about him. Meanwhile, Medvedev, if we're going to talk about Rublev, we have to talk about Medvedev, who had something of a meltdown against Khachanov, where he thought he'd gotten a bad call and he just was irate and angry with the umpire and demanding that they stop making these mistakes. And he kind of went against his new code of trying to stay calm. But I think he's frustrated. It was the first clay event of the season. He did better than expected last year on clay. And the last title he's won was actually Rome last year. But I think, I honestly think, David, that this series of difficult defeats, and in the case of Miami, a decisive defeat 1 and 2 against Sinner, has caught up with him a bit. I think he's a little frustrated. He's so professional, so consistent, expecting a lot of himself. And that was definitely a meltdown. And it'll be interesting to see what his disposition is like in the weeks to come, and how what he can do. I'm not expecting much from him in this phase. I think for him, it's going to be post Roland Garros where he'll try to get going again. But I don't think it's going to be an easy stretch ahead for him in places like Madrid and Rome and Roland Garros.
Do want to talk about Barcelona, which is coming up. Carlos withdrew from that event too. It's his forearm injury, I believe, is what he's been dealing with lately. Rafa, I believe, has his press conference tomorrow. So that tomorrow being Monday, to see if he's going to play. I mean, by all accounts, he's in. He hasn't withdrawn yet. So, I hope he plays. I think everybody hope he plays. So that'll be an interesting tournament. One other person I want to talk to you about, Stephen, I know the
David,
clay court season.
Just a quick comment on that, if I may. It's a good sign that Rafa allowed himself to be put into the draw. That's the first. Because if he was really feeling bleak about it, he would have pulled out prior to the draw. So then he was doing these practice sessions there. Then they sent out some footage of him actually serving, which until now we haven't been seeing. So there's a lot of good signs that he's going to at least try to play, see if he can get through that first round match and take it from there.
If he wins his first round match, he plays Demon R in that second match for him. So.
Yeah, who's beaten him before on hard court. So no, that would not be easy. That would be a real wake up call. But the key thing will be if he gets through the first match without any signs of pain and abdominal trouble or back trouble or not serving right, and then he plays decently against Demon R. That's a pretty good start. And then we'll see where it would go from there in Madrid and Rome, whether he could build on that and win more matches. And again, the whole thing to me is whether he avoids further injuries, whether him having to retire, if he had to retire in one of these matches, there's a setback along those lines, as opposed to just losing certain matches, but playing okay.
Right.
Then we could feel pretty good about him going into Roland Garros and hopefully on his own terms, playing well in best of five and going back to the place where he's won 14 times and having a decent showing. I still think it's a real long shot that he would win Roland Garros again, but let's hope he can at least get there and perform well.
Yes, let's hope he can at least get there and perform. One other player before we leave, I want to mention it, and the clay court season is long, I get it, but I, for one, am happy that I have not seen this individual in the draw yet in these tournaments, and that's Tommy Paul, because he played a great Indian Wells, and he almost beat Medvedev in that semi. I mean, we had talked about that a few episodes ago. Remember, he turned his ankle in that second set tiebreaker before losing in three. Then he turned that same ankle in an early round match in Miami, a match that he was winning. We want that ankle healed, and we don't want Russian back. And maybe we don't know. Maybe he did. He shouldn't have played Miami. We don't know the severity of it, but it's now at least a few weeks beyond that. And again, I don't know which tournament he's entered over in Europe first, but it's nice to see that he hasn't rushed anything because he wants to be healthy, obviously. And that's an injury that, if it's not fully healed, it's just, you're susceptible to turning it again. And he doesn't want that to happen.
No, I completely agree. And, Tommy he's got a very good coach in Brad Stein, good people around him. He's a pretty level-headed fellow. So I agree. I mean, he's got to take his time. And even if that means that he doesn't get back until Roland Garros, that's okay. There's a lot of tennis after that on the grass, the hard court circuit in the summer where he expects to do very well. It goes back to the Open and then the fall. So he doesn't want to set himself back and then miss more months. So he's got to take his time, and he seems to be doing that.
Anything else before we sign off?
No, this has been fun. I mean, it'll be the press conference tomorrow will be interesting. I'd be very surprised if Rafa announced at the press conference, "Well, I've tried to get ready, but I'm not satisfied with my practice sessions, and I'm going to wait for Madrid." I don't think that's what we're going to hear. I think he's going to say, "I've been practicing. I'm going to give it a try. I think I'm ready to play at this level again, and I'm going to test myself, and I'm very excited about it." That's what I hope we hear.
Let's hope, Steve. And again, yeah, let's test himself and stay healthy and no setbacks, and let's see if we could have at least one more run of Rafa on the European clay. That would be great, Steve.
Yeah, no, he also has been wise. You talk about Tommy Paul. I'm sure Rafa hated to miss Indian Wells, hated to miss Monte Carlo, but he also realizes, no, he makes a false move now, and then his plans could go up in flames, and he could have to retire without even having any chance. So this way, taking it cautiously could pay dividends.
Well, let's hope. Thanks for your time, Steve, and let's hope we all get to see Rafa along with all the others in Barcelona this week. This was fun, Steve.
Enjoy it, David.